Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 355, Army to the NFL with Nate Boyer.
I mean, that's the main takeaway for me from things is just to not limit yourself. You know, I never played football until I was 29 years old. I never long snapped a football until I was 31, and I somehow had a shot in the NFL, and I'm not a good athlete. I'm an okay athlete that just worked hard, you know, and that's, that's just one example, but we're all capable of that.
Today's episode originally aired all the way back in February of 2017. I was just getting my feet underneath me with Beyond the Uniform, and this was one of my first big episodes. I still think of this episode today. It's one of my favorites, and I have to disclose that I don't follow football at all. I'm not a football fanatic, and my appreciation of today's guest has nothing to do with what he did in the NFL and everything to do with two things that helped him get there. First of all, failure. Nate has achieved the impossible repeatedly in his life. He talks about being a grinder, of just working hard to go after his dreams. And he talks about how it's not about not having fear, it's about having the courage to realize that there is no downside, that the only risk is not taking an opportunity. There are far too many incredible words of wisdom to summarize here, but believe me, it's a lesson every single veteran will benefit from hearing. Second of all, passion. Nate talks about how many veterans fall back on what they know. He talks about how he tried many things and failed at many things in his journey to find his calling and what he enjoys most. Again, these are lessons I found inspiring and hope you do too. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss, as well as over 354 other exceptional podcasts just like this. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Nate Boyer. Well, joining me today, normally in Los Angeles, but today in the Bay Area, is Nate Boyer. Nate, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to give a quick background for listeners. Most recently, Nate was the long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks, but he's also an actor, public speaker, and thought leader. He started out as a relief worker in Sudan, building camps for refugees of the war in Darfur. He then joined the Army, where he served for 6 years with the Green Beret as a sergeant and earning a Bronze Star. After he transitioned from the Army, although he had never played a down of organized football in his life, he went to the University of Texas and was a walk-on to their football team. He became the team's starting long snapper and played 38 consecutive games for the Longhorns. He was a first-team academic All-Big 12 conference member in the 2013 to 2014 team, while also being named an academic All-American in 2012. After Texas, Nate played with the Seattle Seahawks as a free agent. So, Nate, before we start, I just have to give a disclosure for you and for listeners. So I know that you have been on quite a few podcasts lately. You should know I am the least qualified to interview you in particular. I am a Navy nuke, and I know virtually nothing about football. My watch team, when they wanted to shut me up, they would just start talking about sports and I'd have nothing to add. So I guarantee you this will be different than a lot of interviews because I probably will come at it from a different angle, but wanted to own up to that up front.
Oh, that's all right, man. It's a good thing. You know, I prefer to talk about new stuff all the time and you know, what's going on now and all that. And so, you know, I don't want to live in the past too much, so that's fine, man. I'm good with that.
Yeah, man. I mean, that just jumps out at your story. I'm excited to dive into it. But I, you know, from what I've seen of your life, I just love how you are in the moment and just kind of just trying new things. And, man, actually, I was going to share this later, but I just love the quote that you have, which is, "You live differently now. Whatever motivates or moves me, I explore and seek out. I may not always like it in the end, but I wasn't going to live my life with regret, because regret is just about the only thing I truly fear." And I think it's such a great message, especially for people who are listening who are on active duty, where, you know, you have proven that you can come from the military and you can go on to do anything. You can career off-road and write your own path. And I think that's so encouraging for a lot of veterans to hear, because sometimes they only know of a certain number of career paths, and you're just demonstrating that you can create your own, that it doesn't have to be something clearly defined. And I love that.
Yeah, I mean, what we learn in the military, we learn a lot of things, obviously. And a lot of times it's MOS specific that you learn. But more than anything, you learn how to adapt and overcome, think outside the box, and just get crap done. You know, we are the masters of finding a way. And it may not always be pretty. And sometimes we don't even know exactly what the mission is. But we make progress, and, you know, we accomplish a lot in a short amount of time. And so those kind of skills, that skill right there is extremely transferable to any facet in the world today. And so to limit yourself to think that because I haven't done this before, or I don't have experience, or I'm too old, or I'm not smart enough, all that stuff, it's just BS, man. I mean, everybody else out there that's doing great things, military or not, they're no more qualified as a human being than you are. They just decided this is what they're going to do. They made that choice, and they typically outwork everybody. That's how it gets done. And that's true in sports too. You look at the NFL even. Yes, those guys are talented. I mean, they're very talented, but the ones that make it, the ones that have long careers, the ones that end up being great are typically guys that just decided they were going to work harder than everybody else. And a lot of people that had all this natural talent that didn't put that commitment in are the ones that it doesn't really pan out for. And that's true in everything. And so, I mean, that's the main takeaway for me from things is just to not limit yourself. You know, I never played football until I was 29 years old. I never long snapped a football until I was 31, and I somehow had a shot in the NFL. And I'm not a good athlete. I'm an okay athlete that just worked hard, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's I mean, that's just one example, but we're all capable of that.
You know, I love so much about what you just said, and I think a lot of times on these interviews, people talk about how clearly defined the military is, how they, you know, when they were in the military, it was a clear progression. They knew how they were going to get promoted. They knew the timeline. They knew the pay scale. They knew everything about it. And then the civilian career was this big unknown. But I love that you're shining this light on this portion that's in the shadows, which is the degree of someone's military service that is so unstructured, that is, you know, no roadmap, and having to lead people in unpredictable situations, having to come up with solutions where no one's ever done anything before. And I just love that you're choosing to focus on that aspect rather than what people normally do, which is this, you know, clearly defined military, you know, everything structured. Because yes, there is a lot structured in the military, but there's so much that's unstructured and is reliant on the ingenuity of individuals, soldiers, sailors, Marines.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think why we felt more confident in those situations than maybe we do out in the civilian world is we always had a team around us and others you can rely on. And so that's one thing that I try to do. I mean, I don't have a lot of I don't have a lot of super close friends. I spend a lot of time alone. I kind of do things my own way. But at the same time, when I have a big project or something I want to tackle, I am picking everybody's brain I can. I'm asking a lot of questions. I'm taking every meeting. I'm somewhat building a team around me, you know, whether they know it or not, to help get whatever it is done I'm trying to get done. And you need help, and you need to be not afraid to ask for help. And that's something we did in the military. When you didn't know how to do something, you didn't just do it and do it wrong, because if that was the case, you know, you're going to be in trouble. I mean, that's just the way that is. You know, if you didn't know, you know, you had to swallow your pride and ask whether it was your superior or sometimes even somebody under you, it doesn't really matter. If you don't exactly know, you just ask, and you rely on your team, and you know that they're going to ask you when something comes up, and whether it's in combat or in the, you know, in garrison or whatever, we always do everything with and for the man or woman on our left and right. And you have to kind of create that team and build, and not be afraid to build that team out there. Everyone wants to be part of a team anyway. So if you have a you know, a mission, a goal, a dream, whatever, verbalize it, you know, let other people know what you're trying to do, and get it done together. I mean, it's really that simple. I think about the more I've kind of, I don't know, developed my whatever my plan is, my life goals or dreams or whatever, the more that I kind of get into those and I start seeking out people and those that inspire me and those that have had successes and ask them questions and sit down with them, the more I realize that they're not any smarter than I am. None of these people, they're not these like incredibly genius innovators all the time. They're just grinders. You know what I mean? And that's that I take a lot of comfort in that understanding, you know, in the film industry, the more I've been around that stuff. I was just on a set recently I'm interested in doing some, and I have done some military consulting and advising, and I have a few film projects coming up that I may be working on here. And I'm thinking, man, these are multi-million-dollar films, and like these people must be so on the ball and just with it and have it all planned. It's like chaos on the set. People don't know what the hell's going on. No one understands anything. People, the actors are like these big time actors are like asking me these, you know, questions. I'm like, I can't believe this guy's asking me this, but it's just hilarious that it's like that, you know, and you use a little bit of the fake it till you make it mantra and all that stuff. But it's like that in every industry. It really is. It's not that complicated. We just complicate it in our minds because we see the result sometimes as being this like incredible thing and think that only geniuses could have made this. And it's absolutely not like that. It's just a bunch of people working together trying to figure it out on the way, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, my first year, if not the whole time at business school for me, I was surrounded by all of these incredible people and just assumed, you know, I bought into this phrase of like, well, in the military, you don't have any real world experience and believed that. And then had that dawning moment at some point where you realize like, there's a lot of confidence and a lot of bluster and yes, a lot of ability, but there's nothing here that I don't have. There's nothing here that I haven't gotten in spades from my military service. And I love that thought of that you're saying, which is like, you know, it's not like these people deserve it more. It's not like they're better capable, more intelligent, anything else. Like it's a level playing field in that regard. And sometimes the only thing missing is a little bit of confidence and belief there.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's no different. I mean, I can't believe somebody actually said that, but you're not going to get any more real world experience than your service, even if you didn't deploy, even if you didn't go overseas. I mean, that is, that's ridiculous. But I mean, maybe there's a little bit of arrogance in some of these industries and all that, but that's just insecurity from those people because, you know, they understand, they probably know deep down it's really not that hard what they're doing. They're trying to make it sound hard. So everyone else is afraid to try because they know that it wasn't that big of a task at the end of the day. It was just the fact that they were there. They showed up on time, right place, right time, right uniform, like we say in the military. That's half the battle in any industry, I swear.
Mm. Well, you know, usually I start off by asking about what led you to leave the military. And I want to talk about that, but I was actually fascinated just to dive in briefly about what caused you to join? Because I think almost everyone I've had on the show, it was like, you know, either straight out of high school or straight out of college. And I was just really intrigued by your experience in Darfur and coming back then and signing up with the Army. And so I'd love to learn just a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, I was in my early 20s and 9/11 had happened. And so I had thought about the military and all that, but I wasn't sure that was something I wanted to do. And I was living in Los Angeles at that time, actually, and I was interested in getting into the film industry. That was something that was interesting to me. I didn't know what I would do exactly, but I was also partying quite a bit and not really doing anything productive, to be honest. Not a lot productive anyway. I was working with autistic kids as my day job, and that actually was really humbling, and I loved it. I got a lot out of that. But I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And it was something that I learned a lot from. I was young and all that. But yeah, I knew that wasn't a kind of a career for me in any way. And then, I'd do that during the week. And then on the weekend, I would just, you know, drink way too much. And, you know, I tried every drug. I did all that stuff, man. And it just wasn't fulfilling. As anybody that's probably gone down that road, it just doesn't do it for you at the end of the day. And I honestly, I'd gone backpacking all over Europe, and I would save my money up and then just take off for a while and kind of just bum it, you know, sleeping on trains and living on the cheap out there. And I got back and I made a decision that this next time I went overseas or went and did something, it had to have some sort of a mission attached to it, or like a purpose, you know. And I came across a Time magazine article that talked about the tragedy in Sudan and what was going on in the Darfur, the genocide and all that. And I decided I just wanted to get over there and help somehow. So I called every NGO possible, trying to get on a, you know, on a what do you call it? On a, at a refugee camp or something. And all of them told me no, because I didn't have a college degree and I didn't have any special skills and I just wasn't qualified. So that didn't really matter to me because I had made the decision I was going to go. So I went to I honestly just went to a AAA and I bought a plane ticket over there. I somehow got a visa from the consulate here in the States and of Chad, which is the neighboring country of Sudan, right on the border of the Darfur. And I flew over there to the capital on a commercial plane, and then I just kind of talked my way on to a UN flight that was heading to the refugee camps. And I got over there. I got interrogated. I got messed with. I got, you know, shaken down by the police, all kinds of stuff. But I stayed true to my mission, and I just was like, look, I don't have anything. There's nothing I could be doing here except helping. I don't have a camera even, so I'm not here for – I'm not a journalist. I'm not a whatever. And eventually I had some people that believed me and kind of had faith in that, and they just said, all right. I said, look, I'm here for 2 months. You can either utilize me or, you know, keep fighting it. And they ended up putting me to work, and I volunteered at the camps there for a couple of months, and it really changed my life, you know, just those people, how generous they were with nothing, not only with nothing, with everything taken from them. And I truly gained a lot of perspective. I definitely developed a sort of patriotism for my country, a different kind of patriotism that I hadn't had before. I was just, they were so enamored with an American going over there, leaving everything here to go over there and help them. And they just, they had quite a lot of respect for what we stand for and who we are. And I had heard otherwise from people back here, like, oh, you know, people in those places, they don't like us. They're jealous of us. They hate us, blah, blah, blah. It's all BS. I mean, they just they looked up to us, and it meant a lot to me, you know, and just playing with those kids and seeing those kids that have had horrible things happen to them and their families. And every day, if they can play soccer for half an hour, it like makes their day. You know what I mean? They're incredibly happy, and all they want is food in their mouth, water, and some sort of a shelter over their head, and they're good to go. And it just made me want to fight for people like that, you know, fight for those that can't fight for themselves. And that's why I joined the military. That's why I decided I wanted to be in the special forces, because of that, working with you know, foreign internal defense and working with the indigenous people of wherever. And, it all kind of pointed in that direction for me. So I came back and joined the Army, and, I guess the rest is sort of history, but yeah, that's where that came from.
It's really powerful, man. And I mean, the story itself is powerful, and just the motivation that comes through in that. But I just also love this what seems to be a trend for you in taking the first step. And there's this quote I love by William Hutchinson Murray that he says that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. And it seems like, you know, from what I've heard from your story and seen from your story, that is the trend that I draw through your story, is like, you commit yourself, man. And then providence and everything rises up to meet you. And it seems like that happened in Sudan. It seemed like that happened in the Army. It seems like, you know, when you went to University of Texas, you like set a big goal and you did it with the Seahawks. Like, you just continuously take these major steps. I picture that scene, man, in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when Harrison Ford, you know, takes this step over this huge chasm, and there's really this bridge there. And that's, you know, for me, what seems to stand out in your story. And I think it's really incredible because it takes, I just imagine how much guts it takes to just go over there, not even having a job over there, just showing up. And then, you know, everything seems to work out. But you have this history and this knack for showing up in situations that anyone else would just dismiss as ludicrous. And you do it, and it works out. And I think that's just really admirable.
I appreciate that. Well, first of all, Indiana Jones is the greatest trilogy ever. And I absolutely love it. But, you know, secondly, I think I really do believe that people more than anything are inspired by passion. And if you have genuine passion for something, not fake passion, but genuine passion, you really do love something and you show that by your eagerness to work or just show up or be there for them or whatever, ask questions, all that stuff, they're inspired by it and they want to help you back. And you know, it's talking about that sort of leap of faith. I look at it this way: with all these things that I've really tried and went after, there was no chasm below to fall into. So, if it didn't work out, if I just got told no or I failed or whatever, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, we're all dying. We're all heading 6 feet under sooner or later. And people a lot of times say that guys like me are crazy for trying all this stuff. You're like, oh, you're nuts, man. You're such a wild man. And I'm like, no, the crazy person is the one that never tries the thing that they love, that spends their life wondering what if, and always, you know, continues to live in that sort of, you know, mediocre, I don't know, live without passion really is the best way to put it. And just be so afraid of what everybody else thinks and how I'm going to look if I don't make it or whatever. Man, I fail all the time. I failed at the NFL. Technically I got cut. You know what I mean? I was a loser. I could have looked at that as, oh man, like I didn't make it. My dream died. Or look at how far I'd come and understand how great that really was. And immediately turn that into something else. You know, everybody's got crap in their life, and you know, whether you want to cultivate it and turn it into fertilizer or you want to let the stench overwhelm you, it's all about choices. It's all about how you look at it. And we all have that. That's the one thing we can control, you know, how we react to things and that choice. You can't control outcomes, but you know, that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. And to let that fear of it not working out the way you'd planned or let the thoughts of other people and the, you know, the ridicule and how stupid you're going to look, to let that control your destiny is just ridiculous, because our destiny is all one of, you know, ill will. We're all going to die. And so, you know, to waste my life worrying about all that stuff and worrying about everything is just, I don't know. It's just not something I'm interested in. And I don't think people are moved by that. I don't think people are inspired by that way of living, yet so many of us do. And I mean, I had a time in my life where I kind of did, and I'm just not going to live like that anymore. That's for sure.
Man, you've got so much humility around it, but what I really love, what I find inspiring is that, you know, when you said there was no chasm for me when I made these decisions, you know, my mind started going, and I'm like, no, dude, you're like, there's, you could get shot, there's all these things, you could be, you know, arrested. My mind went to all these negative things. And then, you know, as you talked, I realized it is all BS. Like, all of that fear, it's just, it is nonsense. And I love how you put that into, like, you know, the real risk is not taking the opportunity. The real risk is not trying to see what your full potential is. And I love how you talked about failure. You know, that's something big on my mind right now, is how much we learn from failure and how sometimes it's so daunting. But Tony Robbins has this phrase that's become my mantra, which is, like, you know, the belief that life is happening for us, not to us. And I think it's such a subtle mindset shift, and it seems like you're living that where you're not afraid of that failure. You realize that it's going to make you stronger. You're going to learn from it. Maybe it's not your final destination, but it's going to make you a better person, and you're going to learn from it. And hearing you talk about it, it just sounds so liberating. I just love that thought.
Well, I mean, I want everyone to understand this too. And you think about someone like Tony Robbins, I guarantee you every day he has self-doubt. He has insecurities. He has fears every day that they enter his mind, and they enter mine, and they enter everybody's. We are all connected in that way. So I think that's what stops a lot of people, is they have this idea that people that are attempting these amazing things or doing these great things or successful or whatever, that they just, man, nothing phases them, whatever. It's totally not true. There's no way. We all have that voice in our head, you know, and we just have to understand that voice is not us. We're the one listening to it. And so you can choose to block it out and overcome, you know, I mean, the fear of death or things not, you know, you're not coming back from something like you're talking about, taking these big risks. And that could be the, you know, the outcome. I'm much more afraid of living with myself if I don't try mm-hmm. those things than dying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love that sense too, that courage isn't courage without fear. Like, that fear exactly. is universal in us and humans, and all courage is being able to tolerate or move past that fear. But everyone has that. That's not, you know, if you don't have that, you're an idiot. You know, like, if you don't have some sort of sense of fear. How do you approach your career, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but how do you approach career now? I'm just wondering if you have any advice, because, you know, especially for guys and gals that are just getting out of the military and kind of exploring what lights them up, what have you found helpful in, like, finding what you're passionate about or knowing how to pursue that or even just knowing what steps to take to move towards something that might really light you up?
Well, sometimes people already know what they want. They know what they want to explore, whether they know what they're passionate about, all that. But a lot of people don't. They really don't, you know. And so then I think a lot of veterans fall back on what they know and what they, you know, studied or their job before or whatever. They try to find a way to connect what they did, what they technically did in the military, to what they're going to do moving forward with their, you know, with their real world, quote unquote, civilian life. And I just, you know, I think that that's definitely not necessary. I think if you don't even know what you're passionate about, you just got to try things, you know, try things that you're interested in and just go check it out, get into it, you know, just kind of throw yourself in there. And, there's a lot of things I've tried that I just didn't, it wasn't for me. I just wasn't into it, and I moved on from it, and that's fine. You know, it's not like I don't feel like it's wasting time if I'm exploring a little bit here. And that's I think that's the key. But then once you do find that thing that you're a little bit afraid of and you're interested in, and you sort of find yourself keep getting pulled back in that direction for whatever reason, then I think you need to seriously consider, you know, getting into that. I used to race a little bit when I was young, when I was living in Colorado and I was my early teens. And there was I don't even remember the instructor's name, but he was talking to us one day about, you know, about downhill skiing and you're going pretty fast and you're going around gates and all that, but you're going, you know, you gotta lean into it and head downhill. Right. And he would always say, you know, if you're not scared, you're not skiing. And it's kind of the same thing with life to me. You know, if you're not a little bit afraid or a lot bit afraid of whatever you're sort of getting into, especially in a professional career, I truly believe that, then you probably shouldn't do it. It's probably not going to fulfill you if it's just, you know, something comfortable or relaxing. I think a lot of us, we can't wait to get out of the military and we just want to, like, relax. I don't want someone in my ear all the time. And I just can't wait to get done. And you get done, you get out, and within like a couple of weeks, you're just bored out of your mind and you can't believe you got out, or you have no idea what, you know, what's next. And so, that's just not something, you know, we're people of service. We spent all that time in the military, and whether you joined for that reason or not, you became a man or a woman of service. And we need a little bit of that moving forward every day, you know? And so we have to be able to find those things we're passionate about, those things that we're a little bit afraid of, and then find a way to do something good with them. There was a quote by, I don't remember this guy, this guy's name, but I met him a couple years ago, and he has an organization that he started where he, you know, the sex slavery trade and these, you know, child slaves and stuff like that. And he climbs mountains to help these people, you know, and he talks about doing what you love to fight what you hate. You know, he says that's his mantra that he lives by, you know, and he found a way to connect it and found a way to make that work and found a way to serve in that way. And that's all I'm trying to do now with everything that I'm doing. It find a way to connect it and use it as service to people. Anyway, I went off on a major tangent there, but
no, that's awesome. I mean, one of my things that really frustrates me is seeing a lot of veterans that like you said, they go towards what's familiar rather than what's going to be really passionate for them. And, you know, as you were talking, something that stood out is that fear of failure holds people back from trying new things. And, you know, I keep on looking for some sort of tool that would help people figure out what they want to do. But I think you hit the nail on the head, which is like, you just need to try a bunch of stuff. And that means you're going to quit 99% of what you do, or you're going to fail at 99% of what you do. But that's going to lead you to the 1% that you really like and you can devote your life to. And I can see how that fear of failure holds me back, and I think it holds a lot of vets back, of just not wanting to fail, but realizing like that's the essential component. That's the only way that you're going to figure out what you really want to do. And once you're doing what you really want to do, it's the only way you're going to get better. And I love not to harp on Tony Robbins, but he also says like the extent of our success is directly proportional to our ability to handle or to tolerate uncertainty. And it's like, man, so often in my life, and I see with other vets, so often in our career choices, we want certainty, we want security, we want that safety. And that's most often going to be contrary to what's going to cause us to grow the most and achieve the most and experience the most. Because when we're in that, you know, uncomfortable position, that's where all the juice is. And so I love your willingness to try different things and fail at different things and be open about that. Because I think it's such a great role model for a lot of vets who might be hesitant to do the same, but that's just, you know, that's going to be so helpful for them to do that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've noticed, but every quote I have or everything I've drawn from for my life that I kind of use and live by is all stolen from other people.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's all I do. I'm not an innovator. I haven't done anything that no one else has done.
What,
before,
you know, that's one of the things I wanted to ask about too, is what resources would you recommend to other vets? It could be books, it could be conferences, it could be people to check out, it could be podcasts. I'm just wondering things that have inspired you or challenged you, because I completely agree. Don't invent shit, like borrow it. There's so much good stuff out there to learn from others and to learn from their experiences and mistakes. I'm just curious if anything in particular comes to mind that you'd recommend to listeners.
Man, that's a good question. I mean, honestly, I'm not much of a reader. I don't really have anything like that or any, you know, specific individual. There's just a lot of individuals that have just inspired me with things that they've done in their lives. And, you know, whether it's someone like Pat Tillman, I honestly don't know. I mean, just people I've come across, I just listen, you know. I remember doing that when I went back to college. I didn't take notes in class. I didn't buy the books and read. I just went to class and I listened, and the teacher's going to harp on the thing that they think is the most important. And that's probably what you're going to get tested on. Right. So for me, it's always been about, if it's something I'm interested in, like I said, then, you know, seeking it out, but seeking people out and just going straight to the source, of those that really motivate you, and whether you think that person is you know, two above you or whatever, if you come at it with humility and you honor them in some way and let them know why they inspire you and sort of pick their brain in that way, man, like I said, people want to help. People want to help other people. Everyone wants to feel important, and everyone wants to feel like they've made a difference in someone's lives that day. And so, you know, why not? You don't always have to be the one making the difference. You know, it can be other people too. Yeah. And that's where I derive all my stuff from. But I really don't have anything like that. I don't have like a singular mindset or a book or a quote or a thing that I kind of just go to. It's always evolving and always changing. And I'll be on an airplane watching some stupid movie or something, and I get all like wound up in it, and I get it like emotionally charges me, and for whatever reason all of a sudden my mind opens up and all these new ideas and thoughts and whatever kind of jump in there, you know. And then I get back and I start developing a plan. I mean, this whole, I don't know if you know about, I went and climbed Kilimanjaro last year.
I was going to ask about that and waterboys.org and Conquering Kili. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that all came about, that literally came about the day after I got cut from the Seahawks, because I got released. Of course, I was a little bit bummed out, you know. I was just like, dang, you know, it didn't happen. I didn't make the final roster. I failed, quote unquote, right? So I was literally the next day, I'm thinking, okay, what next? What am I going to do next? What's my next mission? What's my next plan? What's my next goal? And somebody from the – Chris Long, who played for the at the time he played for the Rams. Now he plays for the New England Patriots. He had started this clean water project, you know, and he reached out to me through somebody and just said, hey, I got this new thing I'm kind of working on. It's a clean water project for people in Tanzania, eventually people in Kenya as well. And I don't really know what I see you doing with us, but I just wanted you to know about it. And if you have any ideas, let me know, you know. And a lot of people can take that as, well, I mean, what do you want me to do? I don't really know what I could do for you there. But instead, I decided to just chew on that for a minute, and I was in the gym, and I get on the stair climber, and I'm like clicking through some stair climber programs because I'm getting ready to lose all this weight that I just put on to play football, and one of the programs choices was Kilimanjaro, so it's like, you know, you're gonna whatever, and I'm like looking at that, and I'm like Kilimanjaro, and I pull my phone out and I Google Kilimanjaro. And it happened to be in Tanzania. I was like, that's interesting. And so I called Chris back after I got done with the workout. And I'm like, what if I took a wounded vet with me to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro, but we did it to raise money for these wells, for the clean water wells? And he was like, oh, that's amazing, dude. And I mean, that's literally how that came about. It was just like being open and listening to everything going on around me. And whatever is kind of stirring inside me, letting it just stir for a little bit, not ignoring it, you know, let the fear and the worry and the sometimes the pain and stuff, like, let that stuff live in you. And a lot of times it'll inspire you to make the next move. And that's turned into like a huge, that's turned into a huge project for me. I'm going back this year in March with like, we're going with like 10 people, like a bunch of them are ex former NFL players, and a bunch of them are, you know, wounded veterans, and we're all doing it together, and we're going to raise a bunch of money for these wells. And, you know, so we've got the service element in there. We've got the challenge. And we've got, you know, doing something we love, you know. We're going to go conquer Kili again and go out there and help these people. And it's cool, but it's all just, it wasn't some like master plan hatched over months. It was just like a random idea. And I was like, Maybe I'll do that, you know. And then just once I got people on board, just kind of committed to it, and all of a sudden it's happening. We're off and running.
I love that it seems like once you not remove the fear component, but once you're open to being tolerant of fear and failure, it leaves you in this open state where, you know, it seems like you're open to learning from anyone and anywhere, and you're open to these chance encounters that lead you to your next mission and lead you to your next thing. And I think that's just such a cool example of just not, you know, the nuke in me wants to overthink everything and plan things out and like try and chart a way to a destination. I think that has value at times, but I think that there's so much value, if not more value, to just being open to that serendipity and to working hard and just realizing that the most incredible opportunities might come at the most unexpected time. And I love too, man, I'm just picturing, man, if you know, you're cut from the team and like the next day you're already back on the horse. You're not wallowing in this pity. You're like thinking like, what's my next mission? And your wheels are turning. And so when someone reaches out to you randomly out of the blue, you're open there. And I just thinking like in the same situation, I'd probably be either like drinking too much or just kind of like wallowing in self-pity and might miss that little tug, you know, that internal tug or that internal voice that's leading you on to the next thing. I think it's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, wallowing is not attractive, and nobody's inspired by that.
Yeah,
even yourself. You know, so it's one of those choices you have. Once again, you have no control over the outcome, but you definitely control how you react to the outcome. And you know, what would you want to see in somebody else? You know, when this happened, if you were watching a movie about this,
and
somebody gets kicked, you know, or you know, falls down. If Rocky just stayed down, you know, that's not a good movie. Nobody wants to watch that. And it's the same thing with life. I mean, that's just think about what would inspire you if you were outside the situation. If you were looking at yourself. And what had just happened, and it doesn't matter what it can be the most horrible thing in the world. You know, there's plenty of veterans out there that are missing limbs, you know, and they're every day they are choosing to react to that in a positive way, and they're going on to do amazing things. And it's not like they don't have those down moments and those doubts and that fear and that pain and all that. And they're not ignoring that or shoving it down. They're letting it live in them, but they're also, you know, overcoming it. Without obstacles to overcome, then there's no such thing as greatness. And so you have to embrace those and look forward to them. I mean, look forward to that adversity, because that is an opportunity to do something great. You have to understand that we all have that. And those moments are going to happen. You never know what's around the corner next Tuesday, and it's gonna you're gonna get slapped in the face. You're gonna have, you know, people tell you you're stupid and you're dumb and you're not gonna make it. Your dreams aren't gonna come true, and you're gonna tell yourself that over and over and over and over. But you just have to understand that that's all just part of life, man. It's what makes it beautiful. Is if everything was easy and it was all roses and whatnot, then it wouldn't be interesting. You know, no one wants to see that. No one's interested in that. They're interested in the person that, you know, has been through the fire and they came out the other side with a smile on their face. I mean, that's what inspires me. And I think that's what inspires most people, really.
I love that image of just picturing yourself in a movie. And it's so awesome, because it's like, man, when the worst tragedy happens in your life, when the worst thing that you just can't imagine living through happens, you picture that as a movie, and it's like, look, what does the hero do? The hero like picks himself up and they keep fighting. And that's such a cool, easily accessible way. I just love that as a tool for people. I wanted to make sure I also asked about, you had mentioned MVPvetsandplayers.org, and wanted to give room to hear anything you wanted to say about them as well.
Yeah. MVP, which stands for Merging Vets and Players, it was started by Jay Glazer and I. Jay Glazer is a Fox Sports personality. He had a very short mixed martial arts career. He had some injuries, and he ended up getting into journalism. And, you know, he started out as he was a beat writer for the New York Post way back when, you know, and started – he was working for like $80 a week writing an article about the New York Giants. And he's parlayed that into this incredible career, and he's self-described as a 5'7" Jew from New Jersey. He should have no place being on Fox NFL Sunday with like Michael Strahan and Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long and these like NFL legends. And then there's Jay, and it's hilarious. But I mean, he is the epitome of a hustler and someone that just didn't worry about, you know, all these things I was talking about earlier. And him and I, we were talking one day about athletes transitioning, you know, and how these ex-NFL players, especially the ones that weren't big superstars, you know, the other 90% of the football team there, a lot of them have sacrificed quite a bit, been through quite a bit, worked extremely hard to get to where they were. And, you know, an NFL career typically ends in 4 years. So the guy's 26 years old. And his career is over, you know, that the one thing he's put everything into is done. And a lot of them don't have a plan. They don't have – they weren't thinking of plan B, because plan B was only going to distract from plan A. And we were talking about how, you know, a lot of these guys, they get out and a lot of them are depressed and they see themselves as failures and they don't know what the hell they're going to get into next. They don't think any of their skills are transferable. And I was like, man, that's exactly like the military and veterans transitioning, like that idea. Obviously, we're sacrificing quite a bit more. Our mission is very different. But at the end of the day, the similarities in that transition and the similarities in the locker room and the team room in the military are very similar. And I'll tell you that because I've been in both, you know, that camaraderie and that working together for a common goal bigger than yourself. You know, playing for or fighting for the man on your left and right, all that stuff is very similar. And so what we've done is we're bringing these two groups together, the veterans and ex-players, because there's a mutual respect between the two as well that you see. You know, you bring a group of people in the military to a football practice. Like when I was up with the Seahawks, we had some, you know, some guys from the Navy actually come out one day, and all these guys are sitting there looking on the field and they're like, oh my gosh, that's Russell Wilson, that's Richard Sherman, that's Marshawn Lynch. Like these guys are badasses and that's so cool. And I feel like I definitely don't belong in the same field as them. And then you turn around and talk to the athletes and they're like in awe of these veterans. They're like, man, you guys are heroes. Like the only reason we're able to play this silly game is because of what you guys sacrifice. And it's really cool to see them kind of come together and like I said, have that mutual respect. Well, what we do with MVP is, you know, it's as simple as matching these guys up and girls, and we bring them into the gym. It's called Unbreakable Performance Center. Jay owns a gym in LA, and we train together. We do MMA. We do you know, circuits, and everything we're doing has some sort of a mission towards it, you know, about, you know, maybe getting back in that dominant position of life or whatever. And then afterwards, the real fun part is we sit down in a circle, kind of like a powwow, and we just coach each other up, man. We just have a fireside chat about what's working for us, what's not working for us. We have a bunch of guests come in, you know, athletes that are doing well, veterans that are doing well, mixed in with the guys that are kind of struggling at that time. And, you know, we find that there's that common ground, man. If we walk the walk together, it's really powerful what can come of it, you know. And more than anything, we're just building a community. We're just building that – we're bringing that camaraderie back to the civilian world here and forcing these guys to understand what they're capable of and to stop limiting themselves and not worrying about, you know, what didn't work out or, you know, the survivor's guilt or all these things that we have. But using all that, you know, being proud of your scars and using what you've done and what you've accomplished and how far you've gone with your respective career for the next step and really finding that passion for life again. And, you know, the veteran suicide epidemic is it's really sad. I mean, roughly 22 a day we're losing to suicide. And it's because I think a lot of it has to do with that lack of purpose and feeling like you'll never do anything as important as what you did before. And I think it has less to do with a lot of the post-traumatic stress and all that. I mean, I could be wrong. That's my theory. But obviously that's a contributor. But I think the number one reason is we don't feel like we're worthy of anything. We don't feel valuable a lot of times. When we get done, we get out, and we miss so much. We live in the past too much. And that's all we're trying to do here. Most of the guys, a lot of the guys we're working with in Los Angeles either are or were homeless veterans. And they're, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And it's sad to see that. But at the same time, that's where they're at, you know, and that's fine. That's just part of their journey. That's part of that part of those obstacles we were talking about. You know, that's what they have to overcome at that time. And I say, man, even with that, like that you're in perfect spot right now. You know, all you have right now is the opportunity to come out of that, you know, to come out of that ravine or whatever you want to call it, and really do something amazing and inspire and help a lot of people. And you can do it. And it's you're just as capable of doing anything as I am and the guy next to you. It doesn't matter. We're all just human beings, and we're all capable of so much. So, I mean, that's really it. There's no secret sauce. There's no, like, you know, I don't even know what exactly our mission statement is. You know, we're still working on it because it keeps changing, but we're just building a team, man. That's it.
That's awesome. For our listeners, I'll add in the show notes, I'll add a link to waterboys.org and Merging Vets and Players. But just really, you know, not a connection I would have made, you know, how those two groups mutually respect each other and share so much in common. I think that's really incredible. I know we're nearing the end of our time. I always want to keep the last question more open-ended. And honestly, like, this has been such an incredible conversation. Was not at all what I expected. And I find your story and just your approach to life very inspiring. And I know our listeners will too. I just wanted to open it up to say anything else you'd want to share. It could be personal or professional, but anything else you'd want veterans listening to know that we haven't covered already?
Man, you know, I think about, it's not very professional, I guess, but I think about, you know, these funny situations going on in our world today, and people that do and say ridiculous stuff. You know, I think about that. I think it was about last year, about this time last year, and that Shia LaBeouf had that video come out, that Just Do It video. Did you ever see that thing?
I probably thankfully did not see it. Is this something I should avoid, or should I check this out? Okay.
It's ridiculous. The guy's nuts, right? I mean, he's, who knows what he's taking and all that. But aside from all that, aside from him being an absolute fool, you can find positive messages in this debauchery, you know, because what he's talking about there, what he's talking about, you know, making your dreams come true. And, you know, yesterday, he says a quote in there, he said, yesterday you said tomorrow, so just do it, you know, and that's really it. I mean, you know, it was Nike's slogan for a long time as well, but, just do it, man. Like, what are you waiting for? Seriously, like, no one's going to give you the answers to the test, man. You already have them, you know. So just get off your butt and go after it. And if you fall on your face, no one's going to care more about that than you do. Like, people are going to say stuff, you know, you're going to worry about the naysayers and all that, but they're dying too, like I said earlier. It doesn't really matter. So just do it. And go watch that video. Go watch Shia LaBeouf. And, you're going to laugh. It's funny. But at the same time, understand that he's got a point. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, man. I'll watch that right after this. I'll put that link in the show notes as well. Yes, hey, thanks so much for your time on this, man. It's so I appreciate your time in sharing your advice, but I just appreciate the role model that you are to other vets of just making the most of every opportunity and to continuing to live with courage and not letting fear or fear of failure hold any of us back. So I appreciate both of those.
Of course. I mean, obviously anybody listening to this clearly sees that I'm not an articulate person. I don't even understand half the things that are coming out of my mouth sometimes. It's really hard to translate pure passion into, you know, to verbalize that. And, but you know, the feelings that I have and you know, that emotion when I get fired up about something, like, just like the pain and all that, I let that live in me too. And I let it sort of steer me. And I just don't care if nobody likes that, if people think that's a bad idea and not the way you should live your life, then that's fine. That's your opinion, man, as the dude would say.
another great role model for all of us too, right? I try to live my life as the Big Lebowski would.
He's a man. Dude abides.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Asiri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.